And welcome to the One Center podcast, where we talk about shamanism from the post-tribal perspective, its place in the world, and how it can be in service to our overall health and all-body wellness. In this episode, Ken and I talk about working with spirits. Being able to work with and commune with the spirit world is integral to the practicing shaman, and here we begin the discussion, of which there is sure more to come. What is spirit? Where can we find them? How does this make sense in the West with respect from the cultures in which they arose? That and more just inside this episode. Happy listening!
Lovely to be back in spring again. I think it's a spring up there in the northern climes as well as it is down here in Ohio.
Yes, it's quite stunning up here in Michigan right now. The flowers are blooming on the trees, which is my absolute favorite. The trees are starting to bud with their regular leaves too, and it's finally warm enough to be outside and enjoy it. It's really just a stunning time to be around.
Yes, those moments when the world reminds us that life is good.
Yes, exactly that.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about working with spirits, right?
I think that is what we have on the docket.
Excellent. That is not only one of my favorite things to talk about, it is also the favorite of the 9 workshops that I teach in my training series. Speaking of which, I want to point out that we do have Working with Spirits workshop coming up on the first weekend of May here in Cincinnati. And let me say too that this training series, this workshop series, is available any place that we can get at least a dozen people who are willing to come and move through the whole system. Happy to schedule that. So you can have people get in touch with me. And I think there should be a ways to do that here on my website, whatever. So why is working with spirits my favorite thing to play with? Well,
it's really fun.
It's really fun. We have a good time on that weekend. But it has always been my favorite from the first time that I realized, or even before I realized, that grandfather was not just a figment of my imagination. Mm-hmm. And grandfather being the own God that called me to do this work. And what he taught me to do and what I learned around that time were meditation techniques that allowed me to differentiate between ideas that would arise from my own mind, imaginary spirits that would arise from my own imagination, and things that were coming from other sources outside my brain. And this is something that is so important for people here in the West to learn, because we have this idea that if we imagine something, that it's real. And unfortunately, that does not make it real. It's still imaginary. Doesn't mean that it's not useful, but it is not the same as encountering a spirit that arises from outside of our own imagination. That makes sense to you, I know. I'm hoping that it will make sense to our listeners as well.
I hope so. So to preface this, if this is your first jump into the podcast, there are several techniques that we learned beforehand. I think in part, that's what makes working with spirits so fun, is that we've done a bit of homework to be able to actually dig in to what the work of a shaman is. This is a primary function of what shaman is working with these spirits. So we've learned how to journey, we've learned the difference between meditation and shamanic journey, and we've been introduced to the spirit worlds. With medicine body, we've learned the function of energy within our body and how that interacts in the different meditation and shamanic journey, and you know, live life as it is, and how we can perceive things that are and are not, some variation of truth. So jumping into working with spirits, we've got a little bit of a toolbox to help us with that discernment, so we can tell, you know, oh, shoot, I just had a dream about the boogeyman and he's coming to get me. Or, you know, oh, hey, I'm having this ancestor that just really keeps coming up and I really want to start interacting with them. Or I have this other spirit that's been calling my name and seems to want to develop a relationship. So it gets to that function of where, like, this is where we dig into the work and it's right. good
Here's
stuff.
Where things get interesting. Yeah. As you say, it is one of the most essential, probably the most essential aspect of shamanic work. If you're not working with spirits, you're not doing shamanism.
Right.
Just because you are working with spirits doesn't necessarily mean that you're doing shamanism, at least with the current definition of what shamanism is. But anyway, so first of all, when we talk about a spirit, what is a spirit? A spirit is a non-physical entity that has its own source. It has its own mentality, you know, its own way of expressing itself and identifying itself and engaging. So in a way, it's very much like engaging with people in this world. They are individuated. They are capable of expressing themselves. They have their own wants and, you know, dislikes. Mm-hmm. So how you work with other people is not entirely unlike how you want to eventually learn how to work with spirits. And that is based on the idea of mutual regard and respect. So if you meet someone at a party and you feel like there's a good connection and you swap telephone numbers, cell phone numbers, whatever have you, and then afterwards you have an obligation, and that spirit may have an obligation to follow up, right? I mean, if you call someone up who you met at a party and had a good connection with, and you know, suddenly 6 months later it's time for you to move, and you remember, oh, this person had a truck. I'm going to call him and see if he wants to earn some beer and pizza, right? It's probably not going to be all that interested because you've been...
Who are you again? What?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so you thought we had a good connection, but I haven't heard from you for the last 6 months. And now all of a sudden you want me to spend an entire weekend helping you with something when I don't know you.
Right.
Okay. Well, a spirit is going to have a kind of similar perspective. So when we start, it's always good to recognize that spirits are, I love to say, the spirits are people too. Spirits have their own feelings. They have their own likes and dislikes, as I mentioned, and they have their own boundaries. And it's important to know that you are honoring that spirit's boundaries, that you are honoring that spirit's likes and dislikes. Okay, so for instance, when you first meet a particular spirit that you want to work with, and I will preface this by saying there are spirits that you want to work with, and just like people, there are spirits you don't want to work with.
Yes.
If you're walking
just
down
because they call doesn't mean you have to answer that text or that phone call.
That's very true. And if you're walking down a street and you see someone in an alley going, psst, 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 you probably shouldn't answer. You probably shouldn't respond. There's nothing good down that dark alley. If there was, they'd bring it out into the light of day. In a similar
yes.
way, you as a human being have wonderful defenses, just natural energetic defenses against being attacked or taken over by spirits. Unless you go looking for them, there's nothing that they can do to you. However, once you start looking for them, if you don't take care of yourself, if you don't, as an introduction to this work, I would like to say that, first of all, we as human beings have an amazing array of natural defenses. Energetically, we are completely defended against any kind of attack or spirit coming in and trying to take over. So I would like to, as an introduction to working with spirits, I'd like to point out that as human beings, all of us who are relatively healthy and have our faculties in good order also have naturally occurring, naturally arising defenses against being attacked by spirits. These defenses are naturally energetic and spiritual, and they hold out just as they hold out most natural pathogens. They hold away, keep distant from us any spirit that wants to come in and wreak havoc. Right? So not to worry about that. If you're not looking for it, you're probably not going to find it. Mm-hmm. And if you are looking for it, you just need to be careful what you're looking for. So that brings me to my next point, which is essentially if you meet a spirit and it's not someone that, if they were a human being, you would be wanting to have over for a cup of tea and invite into your kitchen, then you don't want to do that. Right? Don't develop relationships with spirits that you don't want to develop relationships with, right, just because they happen to be there.
Right.
Now, one of the things that is very clear for shamans is that those of us who are shamans have been called. And so someone out there is going to be looking to connect with us. And that spirit is our, what the Mongolians call Ongad. Right? And that Ongad is a spirit who has, before we were born, at our birth, chose us and relegated us to the role of shaman. So probably the best spirit for us to practice getting in touch with is that Ongad. Now, for those of us who are not called to be shamans, which mm-hmm. I imagine is most of our listeners, it's a rare thing. Probably the best spirits to connect in with is our own ancestors. We already share a soul with these spirits, so that makes them much easier for us to connect with. And once an ancestor is passed on, you know, has gone to the realm of the ancestors, they can no longer harm us, no matter how difficult they might have been during their lifetime. They're over that.
I think that's really important to point out, because I imagine, like, in every series, and I encounter people who are interested in this work, but the moment you mention ancestors, right, that complicated relationship to their family, just boom, it comes right on up. And it's like, oh, I can't work with my ancestors. They never did whatever, right, or they were actively very harmful over here, or I was in an abusive childhood, or, you know, whatever baggage they have around working with their ancestors. And that's totally normal and natural. So I guess, how could one begin to approach working with an ancestor other than coming from the other side of experience, just knowing that there are unencumbered ancestors back there? There are those that are genuinely interested in our well-being and good health and happy lifetime. But just saying that isn't I don't know, quite enough to pull the trigger on helping somebody work with perhaps that.
So the first thing that I would recommend is, once you realize that there are positive ancestors out there, and I will also point out that even if you've been adopted, okay, even if you don't know who your biological parents are, who your biological ancestors are, as grandfather says, you may not know your ancestors, but they know you. And so part of this is a matter of trust. recognizing that just as for those of us who have become parents and sometimes grandparents, just as we always want what's best for our children, so our ancestors always want what's best for us. And to begin to develop that relationship, to deepen the relationship with our ancestors, one of the most effective means I've found for this is simply to create an ancestor altar. An ancestor altar is pretty simple. All you need is a little space, a little flat, like a tabletop space, but smaller. Mine is little flat space. My ancestors are on one end and my wife's ancestors are on the other end. And what I've done is I just have a little soapstone carving that I use to represent my mother, and one soapstone carving to represent my father, and then a little bowl for offerings in front of them. And then gradually other things have built up beyond that. There's an old cedar shake carving that my dad made when he was alive that I have leaned up against the wall behind the altar to represent all those ancestors who stand behind my father, those who were around even before him.
Oh, that's special.
What I do is, whenever I have a chance during the day, I will go in, bow to them, acknowledge them, and just tell them, thank you for the gift of life. Very simple. And then put a little water, a little whiskey, a little something in the offering. Maybe burn a stick of incense. But let them know, this is for you. I do this.
Hey, I see you. I feel you. I honor this relationship.
Exactly. And that's a good way to begin. And it's a good idea not to expect much initially from that in the sense of response, because the truth is they've been here all along. We're the ones who are not paying attention. So what we have to do is learn how to become aware of something that has been there all along that we are just not paying attention to. That lack of attention is what we need to overcome. And the best way to do that is practice. Even if that practice is simply that going in and saying, thank you for the gift of life. I would not be here if it were not for that gift, and I am grateful.
Right.
And then gradually begin to add things like, I am having a rough time right now, I'd really appreciate some help. And then maybe a few weeks down the road, say, I am opening my heart and my mind and my ears, my inner ears, to hearing you. Anyone in this ancestral soul has anything they would like to communicate with me. And then just sit there and listen. Okay? And once again, it's going to be really important when great-great-grandmother says something. It's very easy for us to create our own mental images. And it's important to be able to shift into observer mind and observe what arises. And if it dissolves and we know, okay, I made that up. Okay, fair enough. Let's keep listening. Who knows how long it can take? Some people never hear anything.
Right.
Because they're used to not hearing anything. But most of us start hearing more and more from our ancestors.
Yeah. And I think there's good value in nourishing those roots. Those are our roots. Those are your roots. In nourishing them, you're strengthening yourself and you're bringing yourself to greater health and wellness and well-being.
Right.
So.
So where do we go from there? Because that is certainly not the most entertaining of the processes.
No, of course not. But I think the core practice of getting to know your ancestors can translate into getting to know the spirits that you want to work with, because they too, with their preferences, likes, dislikes, you could make them a little altar. You could find maybe a song that was dedicated to them, or a hymn, or a mantra, and you could begin to work with them in that way. Or if they like a particular sort of, or if they have an association with a plant, or an herb, or a stone, or whatever it is, and you can contact them in that way. And
yes, in other words, by engaging with our ancestors, we learn how to engage with others. Just
yes.
As when we are born into this
right.
family, we learn how to engage with our parents, with siblings, with other relations, right? And through
mm-hmm.
learning how to engage with those we are already in relationship with, we learn also how to engage with others outside of them. So then we get into the other spirits. So we all live somewhere, right? We all live in a building, whether it's a rental or it's a trailer or it's a cabin in the woods or a nice house in the suburb. We all live in some place that is on the earth, I'll put it that way. It may not be in nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we all have access to nature spirits. Now, I've had at least one student who said, well, to go to nature spirits, I have to go all the way across the street and down the road for like a mile and a half to this park. And then I can go into the park, and then I can, well, then do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a problem. You still have access. But for most of us, it's enough to walk out in the backyard. So the first thing that I would recommend is that when you get yourself down there onto the ground, because it's a lot easier once you're on the ground, just use your awareness of your own energetic presence and sink your energy, your awareness, your Jing Shen, your wind horse,
mm-hmm.
down into the earth, and keep going down until you feel a sense of vibration, a hum, a buzz. And that is usually coming from the land spirit of this area. Every area on Earth, for the vast majority of places on Earth,
mm-hmm.
has a land spirit. If you go down deep enough, those initial, more superficial land spirits broaden into larger and larger and deeper
mm-hmm.
and land spirits until you get all the way down to the ones that are the land spirits of the whole continent. And I would imagine, I've never gone deeper than that, but I imagine you could keep going down, eventually you get to the land spirit of the entire Gaia. We shall see.
But that would be a fun journey.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So building a relationship with that land spirit, especially if you actually own the land or you're going to be living there for a while, if you have access to that, then you can create a land spirit stone, which is simply choosing a stone, preferably something that's fairly big, something that's going
to say about a foot and a half. Because you're doing a demonstration, but I
yes.
want to say it out loud for people who are listening.
If you're holding a stone and it's about a foot and a half tall, deep, what you can do then is you can plant that. Feel around in the earth that you have just used to connect with this land spirit. Find a place that you intuitively feel would honor the land spirit, you know, without getting away with your landmower. And dig down so you can plant at least a third of the height of that stone into the earth. And then you can put some other stones around, some little gravel and stuff to hold it in. And then you can, if you have a drum, you're using a drum, we'll get into using drums at a different episode, but you can drum or you can chant, you can use throat singing, whatever you want to do, but you want to find a way to bring your attention down into the earth, into the same space as the land spirit, and actively invite the land spirit up. Invite the land spirit to rise up into that stone and say, I give you this stone. This is now part of your territory. And then have an offering there, whether even if it's just water. Mine really likes beer and milk mixed together, or wine and milk. Or,
oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, honey and milk. Honey and milk is what we're doing.
I've had a lot of success with honey. It seems to really like honey.
You just pour that over the stone and feel the spirit of the land taking that in. You know, you can really begin to get a sense of the spirit through that. Because we humans are designed, or, you know, evolved to be able to recognize differences. If you put two things that are exactly the same, we don't notice them. But as soon as one thing starts to differentiate, we will notice that differentiation. So generally, the land spirit will begin to differentiate in response to that new stone and to the offering. And you can begin to feel that. That's if you haven't already felt the differentiation of its song, if you will, you know, its humming in the earth. So, once again, this is a very basic connection with the land spirit. Land spirits, by their nature, don't tend to be particularly verbal. You know, they don't tend to have a lot to say. They don't have... Basically, they just want to stay there in the earth and be happy. And if you give them a job like, well, can you please help watch out for the people who live in this house? Or can you please keep this yard free of moles? You know, whatever you want to
do. Sure.
You know, it's probably going to, especially if you're making regular offerings, mm-hmm. it's going to be very responsive to that.
Right.
But if you don't make the regular offerings, if you only make offerings when you want something, it's going to be much less responsive. So this is an opportunity to go beyond what you've already learned with your ancestors and start to develop a relationship with an actual spirit, recognizing the difference between that kind of spirit and the kinds of spirits that we encounter in human beings. In other words, in our ancestors.
Right? Mm-hmm.
So then, once you've got that down, you can also start exploring the space in your yard for other nature spirits. You can create we have a little spirit house out there that is specifically designed and put there to offer the spirits who have been displaced by a home being built here with a place to call their own. And most of them really like that. And every once in a while, I'll go out there and put them on. Now, I don't have a job for any of them. I'm not going to be building the same kind of relationship with them that I would one of the other spirits, like a land spirit.
Right. But it's like we'll being friendly out to your neighbor.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we get into the next level of spirits. And if you don't have an Om God, then sometimes the best next spirit is one that you encounter in the upper realm, in the celestial world. Probably the next best place to go with working with spirits is connecting in with either a divination spirit, in other words, a spirit that can answer your questions. You've lost your keys and you want to know where your keys are. This is a spirit to talk to, right?
This is on my to-do list for sure, because I do not have currently a spirit that I regularly work with for divination, and I think I would like that in my life. So
it's very handy.
Yeah.
I have a number of them. I've got my little, you've probably seen my little pouch of...
your little tools, the pendulum, the shells.
The shells, all the little stones,
yes.
Naga stone. Nagas are another excellent spirit to connect with. You just have to be very careful. Nagas are water spirits in the sense that they show up in water, usually groundwater. They are usually perceived as a serpent of some sort, and they are generally nature guardians. So they're water spirits, but you might encounter them in a forest or a desert, any place where there's some underlying groundwater. So you need to be really careful with them, because if you do something to disturb the nature, to harm an animal, to harm a nice, well-grown tree, they won't like that. And you may get damaged from that. So it's always a good idea to be on good relations with the Nagas. So
what if we move on up to the celestial realm? What if we really hear the call or the nudge from something that is... What if we encounter something that is calling from the heavens, the skies, the upper realm?
Right. What we in the practice of shamanism call the upper world or the celestial world. That is usually best. Because if you're going to begin to have a deeper relationship with a spirit, you want to make sure that this is a spirit that you can trust, that is safe for you to engage with, and who already has, preferably, an experience of working with humans. One of the most effective and usable spirits for this is a spirit of some kind of divine entity. Now, this gets really confusing, because there are a lot of divine entities that are simply imaginary beings that created, you know, the fact that they were worshipped for hundreds of years just created lots of thought forms, and something grew from that. And that's all well and good. But the best... And by best, I mean the most effective, the ones you get the most use out of, are going to be spirits that at one time were some kind of genus Loki. They actually emerged from the land. Most of these, if you look back historically, were originally some kind of nature spirits. Maybe a mountain spirit, or the spirit of a spring, or the spirit, you know, they were spirits that were apparent to our ancestors, or to whatever ancestors were around them. And then gradually, maybe the people in one area developed a devotion for this one spirit that was the spirit of the spring, right? And they developed, built a little shrine for them, and other people would come and make offerings. And next thing you knew, this wasn't just the spirit of the spring, this one now had a name, and that name grew. And the thing is, that spirit can grow as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's being fed. It's being strengthened. And so who knows where the spirits of our ancestors originally came from? We don't know. When you look in the spirits of the African diaspora, the spirits that make up the worship of Yoruba, things like that, those spirits...
Oh, the Orisha. Okay, yeah.
The Orisha, exactly. Those Orisha, those spirits, look like they originally rose from divine ancestors. They weren't divine until they'd been worshipped for a few centuries, I'm sure. And so you have ancient ancestors that were acknowledged and respected, and offerings were made, and they were worshipped. And over time, over hundreds and hundreds of years, these very strong ancestors gradually took on divine strength.
They're wonderful hybrids. They're intermediaries because they've had that human experience and they're deeply connected with the divine. So they're more accessible, as I understand it, like working with the Orisha themselves, if you have a call or an ancestral connection to them, is that, as you were saying, your relationship will be easier to establish and be more effective in practice. So why not look for something that is appropriate to you that looks like that?
To answer your question, why not, the practice of Orisha is great if you have a connection.
Mm-hmm.
If you are willing to bring a spirit in and allow them to take over, because that's what happens in Orisha, in Yoruba forms, Kumble, things like that. Kumble. In post-tribal shamanism, grandfather has a very definite resistance to us doing anything where we lose responsibility. Now, if I'm being ridden by Baba Lao, right, and Baba Lao decides to do something which would be inappropriate for me to do, and then he leaves, I'm not responsible for that. That was Baba Lao. But when we work with spirits in post-tribal shamanism, we remain responsible even if another spirit has come in. And so this tends to lead us, I mean, unfortunately, I was a little bit late with this, but you learn to hold on to the passenger seat even when someone else is driving the car, right? You maintain the ability to bring a stop to things, to redirect the intention of that spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once you have located or determined a particular divine spirit that you want to work with, you need to make sure that it is still around. And a lot of divine entities are not all that available anymore. So you want to do some, you know, say you want to work with Pele. can't recommend it. But, well, let's choose something that would be more recommendable.
Yeah, why don't we work with someone that you do recommend would be more friendly, established relationship.
Yeah. Okay. For instance, the Hebrews, the Israelites of old, had longstanding relationships with a whole lot of divinities that were not Yahweh. So
mm-hmm.
you have the opportunity to connect in with ones like Brahmai, Asherah, Baal, Anat, But there's a whole pantheon of gods and goddesses that you can connect in with. And
right.
if you have the additional connection of having some ancestors who connected in with them, all the better.
Mm-hmm.
If you have Greek relatives,
right,
then
the Greeks are very friendly. Most
exactly.
of the Greek spirits are quite friendly to say hello to and get to.
Ideally, you would find a spirit that is friendly and one where you can do some research and find as much out about them as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then create a ritual by which you go into an altered state, you acknowledge that particular spirit, you make offerings to that particular spirit, and you say, I would really like to develop a relationship. I would like to honor you. I would like to become connected with you.
Right. I'd like to learn what you have to teach.
Right.
Is often an approach I have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you work with that. It is very important that in doing so, you make sure that you don't leave them hanging.
That's a wrap for this episode. If you like what you've heard, please give us a subscribe and leave us a review. You can connect with us through email at onecenterpod, onecenterpod, @gmail.com with any questions or kindly comments. Ken can be found, KENNDAY, on Insight Timer, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook if you wanted to follow on the socials. Thanks again for listening, and until next time.